Welcome, everybody, to the Life of a Fighter podcast, episode 5. This is yours truly, Mike Cole, bringing you the perspective from an MMA fighter. Joined alongside with James Dalton, MMA analyst and expert.
How's it going?
All right, so the first topic we want to talk about today is we got UFC 141 is going to be on Friday. We got Overeem versus Lesnar is the main event. It's a great card. Like, I've been looking forward to this card coming up. So let's just break down our predictions and a little bit of the fights.
I'm super pumped for this card. I think it's, they're contending that it might be the biggest card of the year. I think that it very well could be.
Yes.
And if you're thinking about ordering it, or if you're thinking about going to see it, you should. Don't hesitate. It's available on Xbox Live for the first time. You should think about ordering it through that. I've tested out the video on Xbox Live. It seems to be going pretty well. And I will be ordering it through that medium. Try it out.
All right, guys. Let's dive into our predictions first. Let's start with a little bit more of the undercard, even though it's really not the undercard. Let's start with Nam Phan versus, what is it, John Hetz? How do you say it?
I'm not too sure. Joe Rogan's going to let us know. Mike Goldberg might mess it up. But you want to start with that, or you want to go even lower?
Let's even go lower.
All right.
Bring it all the way down.
Yeah, let me pull it up, because that's going really low. You know, honestly, while they were just... They're really only talking about the main card and the co-main card on this fight. You know, Overeem versus Lesnar and Nate Diaz versus Donald Cerrone, which I feel badly, because guys like, you know, Matt Yushchenko, who was the first, you know, Vegas main UFC card and whatnot, aren't really getting the attention that they deserve.
Matt Yushchenko needs to retire, though. He's getting old, and I have nothing against
him. He's won his, like, last two fights.
I mean, that's
if you want to talk about a gatekeeper, he's really a great,
Of course. Okay, so gatekeeper, but there's a big difference between a gatekeeper and, let's say, even a co-main event. You know what I mean? Unless that's...
Well, he's not co-main eventing, but...
Of course. Well, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't deserve that. And I understand, you know, he's a huge factor in the UFC as far as the gatekeeper. Because I think that's an important role that people don't understand. That you need to be able to have fighters that can say, hey, listen, if you can beat this guy, you are now considered going towards the upper echelon.
Okay, let's just go as low as the Spike free card that will be on Spike. And another important fact, the fight is on Friday night, but this pay-per-view card also goes back to the 10 o'clock start time, which I am a huge fan of, because what do you do at 11:30 when the fights are over? Yeah, so once again, 10 o'clock on Friday night, which means that the Spike free fights will be on at 9 o'clock. So the first Spike free card is Anthony
Nijikuani.
I always mess up his name. Thank you. No. Anthony Nijikuani against Danny Castillo. That's actually, I haven't researched these fights enough, and I didn't make predictions on these, so these ones are on the fly, so don't judge me on these ones. Who do you have on this fight, Mike?
Honestly, I actually know a pretty good amount about both of these fighters. I know Danny Castillo fought, what's his name? Jumped off the cage, flying kick.
Oh, Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, he fought Anthony Pettis. He was actually winning for part of that fight, and then Anthony actually knocked him out with a nice head kick. So I know he's got good striking, he's aggressive, got good grappling, but I mean, Anthony Nijikuani, he's just got top-notch Muay Thai. That's what he's known for. He's got a good Muay Thai background. I think his striking is going to be the difference in the fight. I really don't know too much about his ground game, but I got Anthony winning this one by either the finish in the second round, either TKO or KO. I don't see it going to decision, and if it does, still in Anthony's favor.
Yeah, Nijikuani, I mean, he looked amazing. I remember when I first saw him, he got, I believe, Chris Hiradeki. Hiradeki was, like, running away from him, not paying attention to what was going on, not, you know, acting like he was in a fight. And Nijikuani got him with a head kick to you know, you'd have to see it to understand what I'm saying, but to the, not the back of the head, but the side of the head from the back.
Because he was walking away.
Right, right, exactly. So, and then he had a less than stellar looking loss, but it really seemed like he rebounded well and worked on some of his flaws. I don't remember who the loss was to, but lately he's been looking really good. And Danny Castillo, I recall him. Look, he's mainly a wrestler, right?
Danny
Castillo, right?
Yes.
You know, it's an interesting kind of like a microcosm of the main event, but Ninja Kiwani, as long as he can keep it standing, you know, his Muay Thai is really impressive. So I'll give it to him. I'll give it to him by KO even, because his strikes are actually really impressive.
Yes.
Ninja Kiwani by KO. Okay, next fight, Ross Pearson versus, I believe, Rafael Asensio. Hope I'm getting the first name correct. Who do you have there, Mike?
I don't know too much about
Asensio. I know, he always pops up. He always pops up, and I always forget my information on him, too.
Yeah. I know a lot about Ross Pearson. He trains out of Alliance. I have a couple friends that are training over there right now, and actually, shout out to Eric Uresk. I know he manages Ross Pearson's weight cutting, and from, you know, what I've been hearing, Ross has been on point with his weight. He's been saying it's a little bit more disciplined, a little bit more difficult, but his weights look great. He hasn't had any struggle cutting weight, so that's a big sign. You know, if you have a struggling weight cut, it's going to transition into the fight. I see Pearson with this one all the way. I'm not 100% about a finish. I think it might go to decision, especially because Asensio, he is a tough fighter. But I think Pearson's got, you know, good striking. And surprisingly, I think his wrestling's improved, which people don't know about, just because he's been training out of Alliance with Dominic Cruz, with all the wrestlers coming out of there. So I look for Pearson in this one by decision.
I'd like to correct myself, too. It's Junior Asensio.
Okay.
And now I'm remembering that name a lot more. But unfortunately, I don't know as much as I should about him. And also, the UFC doesn't have his reach listed, which means that they don't know as much as they should about him either. But they do.
On the phone app.
They do on the phone app, but not on the website app. Yeah. But anyway, I'm going to go with Asensio on this, simply because Ross Pearson, lately I just don't feel like he's been looking as good as he should. And I feel like he's lost a lot of the, I'm not going to say drive, but just a lot of the,
Hunger, maybe?
No, because that would be drive.
Okay.
I don't know what you'd call it. I'm not going to say talent, because I think talent's an inherent quality. I'm just going to go with Asensio. I'll just leave it at that, because I don't feel like I have the right words to describe what it is. But Junior Asensio.
All right. Next fight.
Let's go to the main card where I have a much better description for how I feel things are going to go. Fan versus Hetz. If you read my description of this, NamFam, I think, is very, very, very overrated. I really don't understand why, other than I think he's being used as somewhat of a marketing tool for The Ultimate Fighter. I think people develop somewhat of a, I'm not going to say love for him, but maybe they can relate to him somewhat, or he's very likable. He has a little bit of a, I'm not sure what, a Karate Kid kind of character about him. But anyway, I don't think he's too talented. He went, he split with Leonard Garcia on their two fights. And, I think all he has is, some striking capabilities. And Hetz is 9-0, and most of his wins are by submission. I see him being able to submit NamFam pretty easily.
All right, so we have submission for Hetz?
Yes.
Okay. I do hear where you're coming from, James, with the... kind of could be overrated, but I think NamFam could be, again, he's not going to be the top echelon, but he could be a gatekeeper. I think actually he could be more than the gatekeeper. I mean, I think he could...
A gatekeeper of gatekeepers.
Better than that.
Well, he's 17-10.
Okay.
And that's not in, that's not in the UFC.
Yeah, that's outside of it.
Right.
But I think the ability to be able to get exposure, come into the UFC, and then have maybe better training partners, better work, it will up your game. Now, even with the Leonard Garcia fight, I wasn't too impressed, but to be able to hang in there with Leonard Garcia, Garcia throws bombs. He doesn't have maybe the most technical striking. Mm-hmm. He's got heavy hands. Mm-hmm. Nam hung in there, and I think that If Nam's going to lose this fight, it is going to be by submission, but I do think that he's got the experience. I don't know too much about Hetz, and it's Jimmy Hetz, not John Hetz, but I think that when you come outside of the UFC, there is a big difference in competition. So I think coming into the UFC, fans got the experience. He's got, you know, a little bit of momentum behind him with the win. I'm going to give it to Nam Phan on this one.
Did I say John Hetz?
Yeah, man. It's Jim Hetz, whatever.
I keep on thinking John Hetz. Maybe it's because I feel like he's stealing my name. all right, next fight. Vladimir Matyushenko versus Alexander Gustafsson. I think this is actually a really interesting fight, and this one I have a hard time deciding on, actually. Because Vlad Matyushenko, you know, he's older, he's 41, but he always seems to be able to, you know, fight it out. He's kind of like a Stefan Bonner, but, you know, more experienced even, and more resilient. And, you know, ultimately, though, Gustafsson has shown a lot of promise, a little John Jones-ish, not as impressive, but, you know, just that, a slightly less impressive John Jones. obviously doesn't look exactly the same. So, ultimately, I see this one going as Gustafsson using his range to outpoint Matyushenko. I don't see him, you know, finishing him or knocking him out, but, you know, outpointing him, avoiding being taken down and laid on, and winning it by decision.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you. It's definitely going to go to Gustafsson, I think. Yeah, I guess I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
He's Swede. He's Gustafsson.
Yeah, you never know. But, again, Gustafsson's been training over at Alliance MMA. And I know, again, they're coming with great wrestling background. And their Muay Thai and their striking is great. I know he's a little bit more of a striker because he is tall. He can use his range. Matyushenko has a little bit more wrestling base. So that makes him tough to finish. He's a grinder. So I do think it's going to be hard for him to finish. But I do think that a finish will be there. So I kind of see if Gustafsson can pressure him, use his range, and drop him. I see it maybe getting dropped in the third round, jumping on top, finishing with pressure, elbows, but more than likely it's going to a decision. I think I see Gustafsson with the decision on that one.
Okay, and next fight, John Fitch versus Johnny Hendricks. You know, I had written that this is a bad fight for Johnny Hendricks, because Johnny Hendricks is a very promising fighter, with, I think, a very promising future, and he's basically, it's like an Olympic swimmer swimming into a transnational current. You know, it's just nothing exciting's about to happen. He's not going to be able to go anywhere, because John Fitch is going to lay on him for 3 rounds and win. And it's not, you know, it's basically the bathroom break fight. You know, and it's just not me that thinks that. You know, Dana White, I just watched an interview with him, an Ariel Helwani interview, and, you know, he was saying how people tell him that if they want to go to sleep, they put in a John Fitch fight. So I have John Fitch by decision, you know, as usual, and not going anywhere exciting after that.
All right, guys, I'm going to have to... I agree with the decision. I don't agree, though. I think John Fitch is actually... he's one of my favorite fighters to watch fight. Now, it can be boring sometimes with the wrestling, and I do understand that, but I think that if you know what to look for, and if you can appreciate, I guess, good technique, then it's less boring.
All right, and we'll go into that a little bit later in the show. Okay. The next fight in the co-main event, Donald the Cowboy Cerrone versus...
oh, yeah.
Nate Diaz, Nick Diaz's younger brother. This is, you know, kind of being billed as the grudge fight, kind of. A very quickly built grudge, kind of from the open workouts. Both fighters have kind of an attitude, the 209 versus Donald Cerrone's cowboy attitude. Nate Diaz has the really good jiu-jitsu and the dirty, lanky boxing. Donald Cerrone has the more technical, on the fly striking, and but he's also got very good kind of grappling submission jiu-jitsu. The way I see it going is ultimately, I see Cerrone being able to kind of get inside on Nate Diaz's striking and being the more faster striker and being able to stun Diaz, get him to the ground, and being able to actually submit Diaz, you know, while he's stunned, whether it be by maybe an RNC or a guillotine or maybe even an armbar, you know, but while Diaz is stunned, obviously.
Okay. I think Cerrone, like, I think he's the favorite in this one, at least from my perspective. I don't know what the odds are. I don't know if you know anything about that, James, whatever.
I'm not too sure of the odds on this one. Cerrone might be... I'm not too sure. I'm not going to say because I'm not too sure.
Yeah, you don't want to go. Either way. Again, yeah, I agree with James on your perspective of Cerrone is the more technical fighter. Diaz has, again, like his brother, he's got good hands. He can use that range. He can dirty box with you. I really think he's got... It's pretty obvious, but he's got the better submission game. Cerrone has good submissions, but Diaz is... a legit, heavily touted black belt, skilled black belt out of Gracie camp there in California, coming out of good camp with Shields and his brother. Melendez got great training partners. But again, Cerrone's coming out of Greg Jackson's. And I think that along with Greg Jackson's ability to game plan, prepare his fighters, and Cerrone's striking is going to be the difference in this. I think that it's Cerrone's going to finish him with a TKO. He's going to be able to drop him with either... I really think the key here is not staying on the range with Diaz, but being able to pressure him a little bit, threaten him with knees, and then crumble him.
Donald Cerrone, by the way, is a pretty big favorite as far as betting goes.
Yeah, what are the odds on that one? Just at a... Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so he's heavily favored. It's 3 to... Hold on, let me see. Yeah, Cerrone's a big favorite, okay? Which, I mean, is to be expected. Even though, no disrespect to Diaz. Diaz is a great fighter. But I think at that weight, too, Cerrone's just going to be the stronger fighter. Especially since Diaz went up to 70 because he didn't like the weight cut. Went back down. I think that takes a lot out of you as a fighter. We even saw it with Diego Sanchez when he went down. Then he went back up. And then going back and forth. It can take a little bit out of you. So, again, I got Cerrone in this one. I think he's going to finish the fight, too, with a TKO.
Okay, and obviously the main event, Alistair Overeem versus Brock Lesnar. I have...
Who could it be?
Overeem. Alistair Overeem by TKO. I think that, Brock Lesnar did not take part in the open workouts. I think that it's a big red flag. You know, you can read my article as far as the UFC hubris goes on Life of a Fighter. I think it's a big red flag that there's something wrong with Brock Lesnar. I don't think that he's going to be able to, instill the game plan that people are used to seeing from him. Although you say used to seeing, what is it now? Half and half the Brock Lesnar that is being marketed by the UFC as this powerhouse Viking warrior, and the other half the Brock Lesnar that, you know, got beat up by Shane Carwin and Cain Velasquez. I think we're going to see a weaker Brock Lesnar, the Brock Lesnar that got a foot of his colon taken out. You know, I think we're going to see, Overeem have his way with Brock. Overeem's a K-1 level kickboxer, K-1 Grand Prix champion kickboxer, and Brock cannot get hit. As long as Overeem can get one or two strikes in clean over a 5-round period, Brock's going down. He's gonna bunch up on the ground, and then Overeem just has to go in and not get swept, and just land some ground and pound to get the TKO.
I pretty much agree word for word with all that, but I do want to kind of dive into a little bit more about Overeem and everyone's saying Lesnar's obviously got superior wrestling, which on wrestling basis alone, yes. But let's look at actually Overeem's and his submission. He's got actually, people don't know, he's got more submission finishes than he has knockouts. I think it's 14 submissions and 11 knockouts or 12 knockouts. People don't, they underestimate his grappling. So yes, he's been that K-1 champion kickboxer. But if you look at it, he's won the ADCC. I think it was 2005 in Europe. And for those of you who don't know what the ADCC is, It's pretty much the biggest, the world's biggest submission grappling tournament, no-gi style. That if you win that, it means you are the best in your respective division, or if you win the absolute, you're pretty much considered the best in the world, okay? I mean, you've seen names like Hodger Gracie win that, Marcelo Garcia, Robert Drysdale, Eddie Bravo. You know, there's tons of huge names that, I mean, they have successfully transitioned to MMA, have some just stay in submissions, but that's a huge factor. That obviously the striking's there, but everyone's saying Lesnar's wrestling is going to be the big threatening. Overeem's no a chump when it comes to grappling, so he'll be able to, if he wants to, stand it up. I even think he might even be able to submit Lesnar from the ground. So I really think it's a lose-lose no matter where Lesnar wants to go. He's going to get hit, he's going to crumble, or he's going to want to grapple, and I think Overeem's going to be able to submit him.
Okay, so we're going to take a real quick break, and in the next segment, we're going to talk about what becomes of the loser of Overeem versus Lesnar. Hey man, all my friends are talking about mixed martial arts, but I don't know enough to be part of the conversation. What can I do?
You know, you should check out lifeofafighter.com. It gives you a unique perspective on the world of mixed martial arts that will make you seem like you've been watching it since the first UFC tournament.
Okay, good idea. But why can't I get them from any other website? Or how about watching sports shows on TV?
Well, Life of a Fighter is actually run by real fighters and experts that actually train in the sport. So when they give you their opinions and perspective, they actually tell you not only why you should know this, but how it applies to the information they're giving you. Stats and highlights don't mean anything if you don't understand why they're important in the first place. They also have information and reviews on nutrition, supplements, products, gear, and more.
Wow, that sounds great. Okay, I'm going to get all my MMA news and info from lifeofafighter.com.
And also, don't forget to follow them on Facebook and Twitter at Life of a Fighter. Life of a Fighter. Some fight to live, we live to fight.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Life of a Fighter podcast, episode 5. So we left off talking about our predictions for Overeem versus Lesnar, the main event fight between Alistair Overeem and Brock Lesnar. So now, you know, we question what will happen after the fact, you know, whether Brock Lesnar or Alistair Overeem wins. So let's look at if, you know, like a lot of people, or at least a lot of pundits are saying, whether or not they're correct or not, but if Brock Lesnar wins, where does he go from there? He's just beat Alistair Overeem, so he's kind of solidified the thought process that UFC produces the best heavyweights in the world. He's proven that he is, in fact, you know, worth all of his pay-per-view buy rates, that he has successfully overcome, you know, having part of his intestinal tract removed and returned to full strength. Or has he? You know, maybe he's just shown that Overeem is not everything that he is cracked up to be as people contest, because he has not fought the best in the world in the UFC.
Well, James, let me ask you, do you think, what kind of a win for Lesnar do you think he needs to have in order to really solidify everything you just kind of brought up, the whole intestinal thing, like, you know, where he's at as a fighter? How dominant do you think he has to be in this win?
Well, so I'm going to try to be, you know, I'm going to try to remove my own personal bias of what I think is going to happen. Let's say we're in the world where Brock Lesnar wins. Let's say he wins because he is very well conditioned, and it's a 5-round fight, and Alistair Overeem is not as well conditioned.
Wait, is this a 5-round fight?
It is.
Really?
Yes.
For the interim?
All main events are 5-round fights.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yes.
News to everybody.
Well.
Well, just to me, actually. I'm assuming everybody doesn't know.
Okay. So it is a 5-round fight. So Brock Lesnar, you know, well known to be very well conditioned. Alistair Overeem, somewhat known to have had problems with conditioning in the past. Let's say, for the first 2 rounds, Lesnar takes Overeem down and kind of just lays on him and gives him some lazy hammer fists, elbows, transitions from position to position. Let's say in the third round, Overeem shows some serious signs of wear and tear. And from there, Lesnar's able to achieve full mount and finish the fight with ground and pound. Let's say he wins it that way. That really propels him, you know. Well, that is definitely the kind of win that he wants, I think, if he wins. If he just wins this fight, going five rounds, winning a decision.
Nah.
But, you know, it's... Well, you know, what does it prove? He wins. He still wins. But it doesn't show dominance. If he can win it that way, if he can win it by ground and pounding him, it really kind of... It brings back that old Lesnar. It brings back the UFC 100 Lesnar, the... I'm going to pull a horseshoe out of his ass! You know, Brock Lesnar, the Lesnar that you can really throw up against another heavyweight and start marketing it as, you know, this is the scary WWE kind of, you know, grown... terrifying Viking Brock Lesnar. You know, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I completely. I think Lesnar really needs a vicious win, not just for the benefits of the win, but to really solidify himself in the topper echelon of the heavyweight division, because he's had his ups and downs. Lesnar's a very dangerous fighter, obviously, but if he can implement his style against, I think, honestly, his biggest threat, even more than Cain Velasquez, even more than Shane Carwin, because, yes, both of those fighters had good grappling and good striking, but not to the level, I think, that Overeem's striking has been. So if he can avoid that kind of striking and put the fight where he wants it, viciously finish, I think that solidifies him as a top contender heavyweight. And, you know, puts hush to all those questions of, you know, the surgery with his intestines, being ill, missing time, you know, a conditioned fight. Because, again, I think this is, what, going to be his fifth or sixth fight?
What, in the UFC?
In the UFC.
Let's see. Cain Velasquez, Shane Carwin, Frank Mir twice, Randy Couture, so this and Heath Herring.
Oh, so seventh.
Well, that's six.
This would be his seventh then, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess this would be his seventh, yeah.
So, yeah, so then that's his... All right, so he had six fights. This would be his seventh. And again, I mean, only under 10 fights as a professional fighter, you still need to grow as a fighter and all that.
Well, he had one outside of the UFC.
Yeah, so yeah, but I'm just considering the UFC, again, the real competition. no disrespect to outsiders but of the UFC, but UFC is where the real competition is. Let's not lie. Let's not, you know, pretend it's something that it's not.
Okay, so so where does he go from there? So let's say he's got... Either way, all right, so let's be honest. If he wins, he's going to fight Junior Dos Santos. How does he fare against Junior Dos Santos?
Well, then, if he can beat Overeem, that's like the big factor. These what ifs. If he can beat Overeem in that style, I think he executes the same game plan to Junior Dos Santos. Because, again, they have a little bit... Junior Dos Santos is more boxing, less of the kickboxing. But it's the same style. He wants to get the fight to the ground, be on top, and finish. If he can do that to Overeem, I think he stands a good chance to doing that to Dos Santos.
Excuse me. Who do you think's more dangerous for Brock Lesnar? Alistair Overeem or Junior Dos Santos?
That's actually... I think just because of Overeem's size, even though, I mean, Junior Dos Santos is still a big boy, but he's still a little bit lighter, faster. I think the Junior Dos Santos, I associate, has more of a Shane Carwin style of boxing, that if he's bigger than you, can out-grapple you. But again, he's not Shane Carwin. He's not that big. So he has the boxing. He has, I mean, better hands than Shane Carwin. But that style of a boxer with great jiu-jitsu, great ground game, but he's not the best wrestler either.
Wait, you're saying Shane Carwin has good jiu-jitsu?
No. I was more or less comparing the striking aspect of it. Not as much the grappling.
Now, because the reason I asked that is because Junior Dos Santos is supposed to have good jiu-jitsu.
He does.
Now we're going on the principle that, you know, whether or not it's true, and, you know, we obviously probably question it here, you know, that Overeem has questionable ground game and that Brock is probably far more dangerous than Overeem on the ground. Junior Dos Santos, however, presuming he does have good jiu-jitsu, good Nogueira jiu-jitsu, could, in theory, present more of a challenge or more of a threat, maybe deter Lesnar from wanting to take it straight to the ground, and he's got, you know, the very good boxing. So, you know, it could be an interesting challenge for Lesnar.
I agree. I see, honestly, Overeem's ground game just as threatening, to be honest with you. I think, like I said, people are underestimating Overeem's ground. He's got more submissions than he has knockouts, and everyone makes such a big deal about his knockout power, which is huge.
But his guillotines don't really come from the back. They come from...
Well, I mean, that's physically impossible to come from some back control. I mean, rear naked choke you have.
No. I mean, his guillotines don't come from his guard, I mean.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. Oh, you're being on his back. That makes sense. Right, I get what you're saying. Right. Yeah, more standard, but that's actually perfect with Lesnar, especially because Lesnar is probably going to want to bully him against the cage, pressure him for his style of wrestling. So, okay, fine. Let him push him against the cage. If Overeem can get that standing guillotine, that's what he wants to do. But I do think Lesnar would be experienced enough to take it to the ground and not get caught in a guillotine. At least that's what you hope. This is all the what-ifs if Lesnar wins, which I do not see happening, and I don't think it's going to happen, nor do I think you, James.
Right, yeah. Well, we're doing
the what-if.
Well, Frank Mir also contests that, because a lot of those guillotines came at light heavyweight for Overeem. Okay. And Frank Mir also contests that Overeem's arms have become too big to really be effective for choking.
That I could understand because of the blood that has to rush to your arms, they can fatigue faster.
I think even size, you know, I think size wise, you know, Mir was saying that he keeps his arms smaller, just to get around.
Yeah, to be more maneuverable, more agile with that, to lace them into certain areas.
Right.
I do see that, but I would be more concerned with just of the pure mass and fueling those muscles. When you fill them up with blood, lack of oxygen, the lactic acid's building up, it's a lot harder to finish a guillotine. It's a lot harder to finish off a lot of submissions. So.
Okay. So now let's go the other way.
Yes.
And the way that I see it probably going more so.
Yeah.
If Alistair Overeem wins, like we said before, I see it going that Brock Lesnar maybe... you know, maybe he waits for Overeem to throw some strikes. He goes in for a really aggressive shot, and Overeem, you know, there was in an interview with Karen Bryant from MMA Heat, Overeem it came up that Overeem might have been working on his speed a little bit more, and Overeem might actually weigh in a little lighter because he was like, he said, I'm not going to give away my strategy, goddammit. He says goddammit a lot in that kind of Amsterdam accent, I think. Accent, rather. I think it's very funny. But, so I actually expect Overeem to maybe weigh in a little lighter than usual. But, I think that Overeem might wait for Brock to shoot and really look for that knee. So I see it just ending in maybe like a K1 style Overeem knee to the head, but anyway, and I think that you might agree with me there, Mike. I think that we're going to see Lesnar kind of look like a rag doll again, kind of like Kane-esque. Bad news for Lesnar, good news for Overeem. A win for Overeem, and I think we can. I don't think if Overeem wins, it's going to go to, you know, a fifth round decision.
Right, yeah, I don't see him making it out of the third round, if that, to be honest.
Right. I don't think he's going to be tiring Brock out, but who knows? You know, like I've written too, diverticulitis, not only is it, you know, brought on by stress, it's a disease that affects the way that nutrients are absorbed into the body. Mm-hmm. You know, I really don't feel like people understand exactly what it is, or at least give it the man he's a 275 pound mountain of muscle that needs to be powered, and and you know, fueled.
And you're a machine. You're supposed to be a high performing machine. That you'll hear this analogy a lot of, you want to put rocket fuel into a high performing athlete as opposed to just regular gasoline you put in any other car. Meaning that if you're not getting the right, like you said, nutrients, if he can't absorb it, he's missing out on a lot. But I'm sure he has a professional team. I'm only assuming this, that he has, you know, his blood work being checked for all the right levels of vitamins and right. minerals and nutrients. But
yeah, but at the end of the day, his engine is, you know,
it's performing on a lower amount of
well, food. It's got inherent issues.
Exactly.
So, but anyway.
Kinks.
Okay, so if Overeem wins, it's going to be by some kind of, you know, highlight knockout, presumably. Overeem instantly becomes a poster boy for the UFC. Everybody forgets that he's never fought in the UFC before. And
this questionable steroid scandal of the prior
Well, months. Let's hope that he doesn't test positive for anything. Because that would really throw a monkey wrench into everything.
I don't see that happening. After everything they just went through.
I hope not. I mean, his test was in London. His first one. His second one he took, you know, when he landed in the U.S., and he's got the two random ones over the next six-month period. Hopefully, none of them test positive. But, so, anyway, that aside, yeah, maybe all of that's forgotten. Anyway, so he becomes the poster boy for the UFC heavyweights, I see. He's huge, he's often been compared to Hercules. Mixed race, which, that definitely comes into play. You know, they played the Mexican heritage card for Cain. They're playing the Brazil card for Junior Dos Santos. You know, Alistair Overeem is of mixed race. He's European. It opens you up for a lot of markets. He's huge, huge in Japan. You know, I don't know if people realize that or not, but the Japanese love him. So, honestly, you know, they probably, you know, Dana White always says, oh, you think we were thinking about that when we did this and that? Yeah, they certainly were thinking about that.
Yeah, why not? They're a company. They don't want to bring value to them. Of course they were.
Right. Well, it's a great way to brush people off and avoid questions.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Alistair Overeem versus Junior Dos Santos. Whereas Junior Dos Santos I see as being a kind of a challenge to Brock Lesnar, I see Alistair Overeem as being terrifying to Junior Dos Santos. Junior Dos Santos I see as kind of like a, you know, a very good boxer, you know, that knows jiu-jitsu. Alistair Overeem is, you know, kind of like an incredible striker that also knows how to grapple. And, you know, it's almost like somebody throwing a punch at you and then you throwing, you know, three punches and a few leg kicks at them. So
there's a big difference in variety there too.
Right. Yeah. I don't see Junior Dos Santos faring well against Alistair Overeem at all. Once again, at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be an interesting matchup because the way I see it is Junior Dos Santos is, I guess, a lesser skilled and equipped version of Overeem, or Overeem's a better equipped version of Dos Santos. And what I mean by that is they have highly touted striking games with underrated grappling games. I mean, both of them are, you know, top-notch grapplers, submission grapplers, not just wrestlers, which is a big difference. When you can add submission to your grappling, it adds another level. Dos Santos comes out of a great camp. I think he's a purple belt now, or either a high-level purple or maybe a brown belt.
He's not black?
No, he's not a black belt. Because when he came into the UFC, he was a purple belt. He might have gotten his brown belt by now. I'm not 100%. But, again, getting to work with, you know, the likes of the Nogueira brothers, both black belts. Anderson Silva, black belt. They have their wrestling team they're working with. And again, when you're coming out of Brazil, a purple belt from Brazil is on another level more times than not than other levels of Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters. Now, as far as the striking goes, he changed with the National Brazilian Championship boxing team with their coaches. But now Overeem, I think his boxing is better than Overeem's. That's the one thing I'll give him. I'll give him hands over Overeem. But now Overeem has the ability to put his hands and his legs together, which is a lot more dangerous. He can throw a combo with, he'll hit you with a couple punches, throw a knee, switch kick, or maybe even check your attack. And Junior Dos Santos' kickboxing game is quite limited, I think. I think he can throw low kicks, maybe a couple knees, but the way he versus them together, I don't see it on Overeem's level. If he can keep it boxing, then I think Junior Santos can win this one. But Overeem's got the power in his hands that he's got to watch out for, and just more variety in his kicks and his attacks. So,
you really think that JDS is or Junior Dos Santos' boxing is better than Overeem's?
Yes, I really do, especially from all the high the fight footage. Because every time I even watch him in K1 kickboxing, now again, you have to remember when you're in K1 kickboxing, you're not mindful of the takedown, so it changes your stance, changes your approach a little bit. But even watching that, when I throw over him, or when I watch over him throw his punches, he's not putting 3, 4, 5 punch combos together. He's just bombing, which is great because it works for him. But he's hitting you with 1 or 2 punches instead of Dos Santos will hit you with 5 or 6, which is a lot more dangerous in the sense of when you have someone on the attack. But Overeem can counter with that big right hand at any time.
Now, do you think that, as far as Overeem's power, though, do you think that Overeem could just punch right through Junior Dos Santos' guard?
Wait, punch through his...
through his guard. Through him.
His defense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes and no, depending on how he wants to approach it. If he's just going to cover up, Overeem's going to destroy him. But if you see the Junior Dos Santos that I think we should see, if, and again, this fight isn't happening, but we're saying hypothetically, because Overeem's going to win, and I think Dos Santos Overeem is a great matched fight. I think that's where it should go. I would get excited just thinking about it now.
I won't let you finish your thought because I want to talk about that a little more.
James is going to go in the zone, but I really do. I think that Dos Santos has better, when I say boxing, I mean he's a better technical boxer. So that includes his head movement, that includes his footwork, that includes his hand speed, that includes even, I mean, he's got good power. He does, especially for, I think he's what, 230, 235, maybe 240.
JDS, I think, weighed in at 237 for his fight against Ken.
Okay, so like right under, let's say right under 240. And I mean, Overeem's a big boy, but he's got enough of his weight there. And you know, let's say even Junior Dos Santos comes in at 245 for his next fight, thinking he'll put on a couple pounds. Which is what's probably going to happen to maintain in this weight division. I think that he'll have enough power to threaten Overeem. If he can pressure him, he might be in trouble. Because, there's been very few times we've seen Overeem pressured against the cage or in trouble and have to react to it. So that's always something I like to see out of fighters. And, I mean, I think the last time he really had a struggle that I can even really recall is when he fought Chuck Liddell, which a lot of people don't remember Overeem and Chuck because that was back in the
day. Was that even 205 or was
that
lighter?
No, it was 185. It was 185 when they fought, but it was just stylistically. Now, again, he's a different fighter because he's bigger, faster, stronger, or bigger and stronger. I don't know about faster.
Better, faster, stronger.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But, again, guys, I really think that would be the best matchup, Junior Dos Santos versus Overeem. Dos Santos, better hands, but Overeem, better overall game, so that would be a great fight.
All right, in the interest of time, you know, and we got to move on to the next segment, but I just want to talk about one more thing. Let's say that Overeem goes through Lesnar and then he beats Junior Dos Santos, who do you think would be the next challenger for the, a champion Overeem?
I would like to see Cain Velasquez, you know, get another shot. Excuse me. Realistically, I mean, we can even talk about there's a new fighter that the UFC just acquired from Strikeforce, Shane Del Rosario. I think I'm saying his name right.
Yeah, Shane Del Rosario.
No, he's not on that level yet.
Well, he was like 10-0 or 11-0, but he was in a really bad car accident. I didn't even know that he was active again.
Yeah, no.
I saw that he got signed.
Yeah, exactly. He got into a car accident. I think he had a fight though since he got to the car accident.
I didn't know that, but I don't think that it would be him though, because he would need to be introduced to the public before he got a title.
I think two more fights and then he would be but that leaves room for maybe Cain Velasquez versus Overeem. Mm-hmm. And then maybe one more fight in between, then seeing if Shane can handle
it. AKA wants Cain Velasquez to have 1 or 2 fights before he gets another title shot.
Okay.
So you know who I'm thinking.
Carwin?
No. That would be interesting.
After Dos Santos, you're saying?
Yeah.
Who else do we got in heavyweights?
Come on.
Lay it on me. Lay it on me, James. Tell me.
My boy.
At heavyweight?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Frank Mir.
Oh, Frank. I mean, I think I would really like to see Frank Mir have another fight before.
Okay. All right. So let's say Frank Mir fights Cain Velasquez.
Yeah, I would love to see that fight. That's actually great. I think winner of that should get over.
But Cain Velasquez might be injured, actually, with his knee. But let's say hypothetically Frank Mir fights Alistair Overeem. How do you see that going?
Okay.
Let's just do it quick.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a big fan of Frank Mir, and like, I think he's got better jujitsu. That's.
I wouldn't even want to predict it because I like them both so much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think honestly, Frank Mir has the ever evolving, bettering striking game. Hands again, I think that he's got great hands, but the kickboxing game. I know the kickboxing coaches he's working with and the level of training partners he has, but I don't think his kickboxing is going to be even in the same ballpark as Overeem.
No, so, but his jiu-jitsu, I think...
is better, yeah.
Yeah.
Even his wrestling's been... he's been working on his wrestling a lot.
Do you think his jiu-jitsu is better than Fabricio Werdum's?
I don't know as much... I haven't seen as much footage on Werdum to really make... I'm going to give it to Frank Mir, though, just because I'm a Frank Mir fan. I know the camp he comes out of.
I think Mir's jiu-jitsu is more applicable to MMA.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a big advantage because Drysdale and Mir and all the people they work with, they specifically have, their pro class where they work MMA or jiu-jitsu for MMA. Okay. They don't waste time on maybe sweeps that'll put you in a bad position or threaten you.
All right. I'm not even going to touch upon who I think would win because that's just, I'm going to get sick to my stomach even thinking about that fight because
the excitement is crazy.
Mir versus Overeem and Mir Lesnar 3. Mir Lesnar 3, I don't care if Lesnar loses. I want to see Mir Lesnar 3. That is a fight that would make the UFC a lot of money.
Yes.
But anyway, let's take another quick break, and then we're going to talk about John Fitch a little bit real quick and his style, and we're going to give our opinions on it. Okay, be right back. Hey, man. All my friends are talking about mixed martial arts, but I don't know enough to be part of the conversation. What can I do?
You know, you should check out lifeofafighter.com. It gives you a unique perspective on the world of mixed martial arts that will make you seem like you've been watching it since the first UFC tournament.
Okay, good idea. But why can't I get them from any other website? Or how about watching sports shows on TV?
Well, Life of a Fighter is actually run by real fighters and experts that actually train in the sport. So when they give you their opinions and perspective, they actually tell you not only why you should know this, but how it applies to the information they're giving you. Stats and highlights don't mean anything if you don't understand why they're important in the first place. They also have information and reviews on nutrition, supplements, products, gear, and more.
Wow, that sounds great. Okay, I'm going to get all my MMA news and info from lifeofafighter.com.
And also, don't forget to follow them on Facebook and Twitter at Life of a Fighter. Life of a Fighter. Some fight to live, we live to fight.
All right, guys, welcome back to Life of a Fighter podcast, episode 5. And just for a few minutes here, we're going to discuss John Fitch. He's on the UFC 141 card. Obviously, not much is being made of the, fights past the co-main event. You know, it's unfortunate because the other fighters should get their due respect.
That's a lot of good fights.
Yep. Yeah. But one fight, I don't know if I'd use the word good, but I'm biased. Okay. No, obviously. He's obviously a great fighter. Okay. Anyway, let's just get to the topic at hand. John Fitch, you know, you're probably familiar with him if you follow MMA. He's a very talented fighter. He has an excellent record. He's known for using his wrestling background extensively. He has a tendency to, you know, kind of lay on guys and win by decision.
Called lay and pray.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was avoiding using the term, but yeah, it is.
You can throw it out.
Yep. Anyway, he trains out of AKA, you know, the home of many great fighters like Cain Velasquez, Josh Koscheck, Mike Pyle. You have any other names from? Okay. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Dave Camarillo, the
Cormier.
Right. Daniel Cormier. Dave Camarillo, the grappling coach there, jiu-jitsu coach, had a quote this past week. Winning is the most important thing on our minds. How you win is a far second. John is a great fighter. He represents how hard work beats talent. He's not fast or flashy. He doesn't take steroids. He doesn't cheat. He just works hard. Those who criticize John, for the most part, are fans who do not understand MMA. So I ignore it. So, I am somebody who criticizes John Fitch. I am an MMA fan. I'm you know, I guess you could call me an MMA analyst, and I understand, I think, MMA, and I don't like how he fights. You know, I think that he's far more talented. I think that he could look for finishes, and I think that he's satisfied with just allowing things to go the way that they do when he should be looking for better results.
Okay. That brings up a classic topic that I heard the best line to deal with it when I first started training. My coach, Eric Giras, told me this one. Position over submission. Okay, that kind of covers it. I mean, basically the concept is, especially I could see with John Fitch's style, is you want to make sure you have your position settled in. You want to make sure that you're not going to lose the position of a top game, let's say mount, side control, even half guard. If you have them up against the cage, you can pressure them. You don't want to lose that going for a submission that you might end up not even getting the submission, and then you lose your position, and where does that leave you? Not only in the judge's eyes, but then as far as the fight goes, momentum shifts. There's a big factor that plays along with it. Now, I also think that even his striking is a lot better than people give him credit for. I think his Muay Thai is ever evolving.
What, in the fights?
In general. I mean, what he shows in the fights is...
Well, nobody cares about, you know, you're not getting...
For what you can do in the gym.
Yeah.
I gather that. But I think that he will be showing his striking a little bit more. I just think maybe some of the matchups stylistically have put him in a wrestling position. I think even this one, I think he's going to... Hopefully it doesn't turn into a wrestling match, but even if it does...
we know it's going to. It's John Fitch.
I think he might actually pull out some striking on this one. I think if he wants to evolve as a fighter, he's going to have to...
He might even just wait for the three count.
You never know. And be like, oh, then there's the pin.
Yeah.
But I really think that... Fitch, he's a better fighter. I mean, even when he fought BJ Penn, again, you could say, you know, it's the lay and prayer, the lean and punch kind of style against the cage. But if it works, you know, no one has a problem when Randy Couture would lean on people and wear them down and grind off.
I actually didn't enjoy it.
Okay, well then, your perspective.
But also, you know something though? Randy Couture did it standing.
Yes. Okay.
And he threw punches, and he looked for finishes, and he finished fights.
He did.
And he got mounts, you know, and he was looking for finishes.
Does John Fitch
look for finishes, or does he just look for positions?
I think he's looking for a position to settle in to finish. He's a high level grappler, so I think that he just wants to make sure he keeps his position because he does strike from the top. I mean, he's scrappy. He scrambles too, depending on the position. I mean, he'll. It's just a matter of what do people want to see? They want to see the knockout punches. They want entertaining submissions too, like the Frank Mir Kimura he had on Nogueira. That's entertaining submission. But sometimes it's not the most common way to finish a fight. So you have to be able to say, okay, this is still entertaining, but I understand.
I mean, listen, there's other very talented wrestlers like Matt Hughes.
Yes.
You know, look at like Daniel Cormier.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They do have that big slam style.
You're supposed to use... Listen, in mixed martial arts, aren't you supposed to use your wrestling to not get taken down and to finish the fight?
Yes.
What's the goal? To go to the judges or to finish the fight?
Of course, you want to finish the fight.
John Fitch doesn't want to finish the fight, or else he'd be able to finish the fight. Or can he not finish fights? That's ultimately the question. Can John Fitch not finish fights? Or else why would he continue to just go to decision all the time? Because he should be able to use his wrestling defensively, no?
Which I think he doesn't even offensively. I think he can use it. I think it's also a matter of his striking game, too. I think maybe his comfort level with his striking, he'll revert to that classic reverting to your comfort level of wrestling. And maybe that's something they're going to have to work on. But I think even just from what I've seen in fights, he does look for the finish. And it's not like he hasn't ever finished anybody before. I'm just trying to remember who the last finish was. Actually, so
yeah,
that makes me look kind of bad.
And I'm not going to look it up for you either.
Hold on, let me pull it up really quick.
All right, it's not that important, but anyway, so that's a very that's the argument right now with John Fitch, and we'll have to see what he does with Johnny Hendricks. You know, maybe Johnny Hendricks will push him, and maybe Johnny Hendricks will have the ability to to counteract his wrestling. I don't see it happening, but. Who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, and let's even say, like, Johnny Hendricks, I think he's a good fighter, too. So I think he's going to be a good test for both of these fighters to see who can come out and execute their game plan and take another step towards the title.
I don't know when John Fitch's next opportunity to get towards that title will be, because I don't think the UFC is going to allow him to get a chance to fight a guy that he might actually beat, you know, for an interim welterweight title and then, you know, let that be GSP's fight back.
Right, okay.
Because that's not very marketable.
Right, yeah.
And when GSP comes back, they're going to want him to fight somebody that people are going to want to pay to see. So, okay.
No.
All right. Anyway, Mike's, I think...
I'm looking out right now his fight history.
He's got a really dig I'm just paleontology to find John Fitch's last finish.
Hold on, let's look. I'm looking up at his history. It's saying, you know, who he's
cannot be found.
Yeah, all right, so... I recognize the argument, though, John Fitch can't finish fights or isn't finishing fights. Or that's even an argument I hear even with GSP, you know, he doesn't finish fights anymore.
Right. And so, I agree with that, too. Let's not you know, single out, you know, John Fitch.
I think a big factor has to do with it is they want, like Dave Camarillo said, they want to win. That's the most important thing. The win is the most important. So if you look back and they're 10-0... If they're 10-0 whether decision or 10-0 whether submission every time, they're still 10-0, and now they can have a step in the right direction towards the title, making more money.
Okay. So anyway, let's finish this up. And just for everybody's information, John Fitch's last finish in a fight was against Ron Carneiro?
Oh, Ron Carneiro.
Ron Carneiro, okay. At... UFC Fight Night, Stout vs. Fisher, June 12th, 2007.
Yeah, so...
Some of our listeners might not have been born.
So it's been a while. It's been a while since he finished.
All right. All right, guys. That's going to be our episode this week. Enjoy UFC 141. Hopefully we can help you impress your friends, and we will talk to you next week.